Newsbreak today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. At the state level, Michigan's politics went the way of Democrats in ways that absolutely were not anticipated in Tuesday's elections. High prices and historically bad years for the party in power during the midterms were thought to be insurmountable obstacles. But of course, it turns out that they weren't. Democrats won the governor, attorney general, and secretary of state races, and they appear at least to have won control of the state house and state senate. The state senate is a key win given that it's been 40 years since there was a Democratic majority in that chamber. Also, all three ballot proposals passed, and they were all three things that were supported pretty heavily by the Democratic Party. So why did Democrats in Michigan have so much success? Why did they seem to do so well in the suburbs, particularly in places like Oakland and Kent, and even in Macomb County? Also, what does this mean for the future of the Democratic and Republican parties in our state? That is where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. And we've got two reporters with us who have been following these issues really closely. Craig Mauger covers state government and politics for the Detroit News. He's a pretty frequent guest with us here on the show. Craig, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Clara Hendrickson. She is a politics reporter for the Detroit Free Press and for PolitiFact Michigan. Clara, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I want to start with the two issues that we didn't get much chance to talk about on yesterday's show, Proposals 1 and 2. We talked a lot about Proposal 3. We talked a lot about other races. But these proposals were very significant. They make pretty important changes to politics and political infrastructure in the state. Craig, I'm going to start with you. I want to talk about Proposal 1. Why do you think that did as well as it did? And what will adding this financial transparency, which was the other thing that happened with Proposal 1 other than changing term limits, what's that going to do to the climate in Lansing?
Yeah, I think this proposal passed just because people broadly support what the proposal does. I mean, if you just look at what the change is here, you can support it from either side of the aisle because on its surface, it decreases the overall amount of service, the term people can serve in Lansing from 14 to 12. So there, the people that hate term limits kind of on its surface at least would say, hey, that's a good thing. I mean, people that hate unlimited terms would say, hey, that's a good thing. And then on the other side, you have this financial disclosure piece. Michigan is one of two states that don't require state office holders to file any type of public disclosure about their financial interests. There is broad support for changing that. As part of your second question, what will that mean? It's all going to depend on what the legislature does in the coming months. This ballot proposal gives the power to set the parameters of these financial disclosures to lawmakers. So they could do one of two things. One thing they could do is just set up a system where lawmakers have to file reports and put out information that's already public. Here's my campaign finance disclosure. Here's what lobbyists spent on me. That's already disclosed elsewhere. I mean, they could do something like that, or they could go even further and make the disclosure broad, make it in-depth, make it really something that safeguards the legislature against conflicts of interest like what they have in Congress. A lot of lawmakers have pledged to do something more drastic than just some basic form that releases information that's already out there. We'll get to see whether they stand up to that or not.
So part of what you're talking about, I think, is a really important point about process. We voted to make these changes on Tuesday, and that's the important part of the change, or the most important part of the change. But these proposals, all of them, will have to be interpreted and fleshed out, not just by the legislature in some cases, but also by the courts themselves to figure out how they fit in with the rest of the legal and political infrastructure. There are a lot of things that are possible because Proposal 1 passed, but that doesn't necessarily mean they will happen. And people should keep that in mind. You know, pick up the phone, call your representatives in Lansing if you feel like this should be more aggressive than passive. Craig, do you imagine that there will be a lot of wrangling over what this practical end of something like Proposal 1 looks like?
Yeah, I think there could be. I think the fact that Democrats have, you know, total control makes that less likely. I mean, Democrats have been urging the legislature to institute these financial disclosures for many years. Now they're in power. They have the chance to do it. If they do something that is extremely weak, you know, they're going to have to answer for that. So we'll see. And I'm sure they know that. They know they're on record about this issue. The person who could be elected Senate Majority Leader today, Winnie Brinks, has already said that she wants a strict financial disclosure policy. So now it's going to be up to her to implement that.
Yeah. Clara, I want to talk about Proposal 2, which in many ways I think can be seen as a follow-up to some of the things that were done in 2018 with the voting reforms, but talk more about what voters decided to do with voting access and protection.
Sure. So one of the major changes in this constitutional amendment is that it would establish an entirely new voting method in Michigan. Under the amendment, it would require at least 9 days of early voting. So right now, Michigan voters can go in person to their clerk's office before an election and cast their absentee ballot in person and fill it out and return it, but they can't actually insert that ballot into the tabulator. But they'd be able to do that under this amendment. They'd go to early voting sites and be able to vote just as they would on election day at their polling location. As you noted, there was that 2018 constitutional amendment that established no reason absentee voting, giving every voter in the state a right to cast an absentee ballot. This amendment is kind of a follow-up to that because it expands absentee voting. It allows voters to fill out a single application to request an absentee ballot for all future elections. And then it also requires state funding for drop boxes in every municipality and prepaid postage for absentee ballot envelopes. One major change, too, is, or I guess it's not really a change, it's kind of maintaining the status quo, but part of the proposal is designed to basically preempt Republican efforts to enact more stringent voter ID laws in the wake of the 2020 election. So Proposal 2 basically just enshrines the laws that are on the books today in the Michigan Constitution.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Let's go to the phones here and start with Rhonda in Troy. Rhonda, what's on your mind?
Well, good morning.
Hi.
First of all, I'm very happy about Tuesday. I'm the parent of a millennial and a Gen Z, and I just would like to see the Democrats start to turn and show a little more respect for those groups. They're smart. They care. There are definitely issues that they are very passionate about. They came out, they were starting to really get engaged in the elections, and I would like to see the Democratic Party start to really use that as a fire in their belly for the future of the party to show that they care about those groups and what they care about. They need to start listening to them a little bit more. That's my thought
so,
on that.
So, Rhonda, before I go back to our guests, can you be more specific? What are the things that you think Democrats need to do to connect with that generation? What are the issues that you think maybe they're not paying attention to that are important to those voters?
Well, I think that, you know, in the case of millennials, let's say, for instance, I don't know a single millennial that doesn't say to me, well, there's never going to be Social Security when I get there, so I just can't plan on it. And so there's a concern about their future financially. That's one thing. I think that, you know, obviously climate change, and I know that people are trying to address that, but that needs to be taken, you know, to the mat, climate change. And with Democrats and progressives, I know, try, but it gets difficult when they come up against the people like Manchin and so on. I also think that there is a great concern about how they're not getting the same financial situation as their parents. You know, they're not how it always was when I was a young person. It's like, well, everybody's going to do better than their parents. Not the case anymore financially. And I think that's a concern for millennials when they're paying $2,000 a month in child care and trying to work and carry on. I think there needs to be a little bit more listening to what their real day-to-day concerns are. There seems to be lots of concerns about what's happening in all versions of the country and, you know, and geographically, but there needs to be generationally listening to the concerns that they have.
Yeah, I really appreciate the call and that perspective, Rhonda. Clara, we don't know quite yet all of the turnout dynamics that led to Democrats winning on Tuesday. I mean, there's some numbers that have been discussed, but this idea that young voters came out in larger numbers and that may have something to do with how blue the votes ended up being. That's not the craziest thing in the world. But talk about the turnout and how dramatically different it was than what people predicted. Jocelyn Benson, the Secretary of State, says it was a higher absolute turnout than in 2018 when we set a record for a midterm election. This was a turnout election. I mean, I know sometimes people say you shouldn't say that because every election is a turnout election. But here, the expectations for turnout and what actually happened, the gap between those two things, I think really does explain what happened.
Sure. We saw just widespread voter engagement in this election and turnout exceeding expectations, particularly, I think, due to the fact that there were more in-person voters than anticipated. Obviously, there were still many voters in the state who embraced their right to cast an absentee ballot, but a lot of folks showed up in person on election day to cast their ballot in person. Ahead of the election, to Rhonda's point, we did see a huge number of young voters registering to vote in Michigan compared to the 2018 election. And we saw many college voters taking advantage of their right to register to vote on election day and cast a ballot. I think the last voter in the state was in Ann Arbor, yeah, after 2 a.m. waiting in line, right, to cast that final ballot. So, you know, people were committed. They waited it out to participate in this election. And I think part of that that I've heard across the board is just abortion being a driving issue for why people came out and voted this time around.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Rhonda, really appreciate the call. Let's go to Gene in Detroit. Gene, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
I just wanted to throw out there that this may be a good time, with the Democrats having control of both houses in Lansing, to reconsider abolishing the emergency manager law that has led to so many abuses in the Democratic process.
Yeah, Gene, you know, you're calling about that issue. Yesterday, we had someone call and talk about film incentives. And, you know, I think it's been so long since Democrats had even the potential to make those kinds of big changes that those issues have kind of slipped away from the front of our conversation about politics. But that's another issue that no question lots of liberal or Democratic voters probably would like to see. Craig, there are a host of things that people will expect, I think, from a governor and a legislature that are of the same party, and the list will be longer than they could ever get to. But talk specifically about things like the emergency manager law, which is deeply unpopular, especially in Democratic circles, and other things that the governor may be able to say, all right, we can actually sit down and think about taking these on because we have more power than we did before.
Oh, I mean, the caller makes a great point that I haven't even thought about in the last couple of days because of how fogged my brain has been. But yeah, I mean, all of these things are on the table. All of the landmark, you know, controversial policies that the Republicans have enacted, you know, during the Snyder administration and previously will be on the table. It's a question of, as I was talking to Democrats yesterday, what is the order and what is the timing of doing these things? I mean, keep in mind, they have very small majorities, mm-hmm. You know, and often, you know, seats become vacant during the term and there are special elections. So, I mean, the big things and the most important things that they want to get done, they will likely have to do those pretty quickly once they take office so they don't run the risk of a seat becoming vacant in the House and them losing their majority there. The emergency manager law, I mean, that would likely be one of the things that I'm sure they're talking about doing. Right to work, prevailing wage repeal. These are other really major policy, historic things that the Republicans have done that will be put on the table very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Craig Mauger of the Detroit News and Clara Hendrickson of the Detroit Free Press. Also, we'll continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. Jeff in Roseville, Kyle in Ypsilanti, Zoe in Ferndale. We will get to you if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about elections here in the state of Michigan on Tuesday, what the results were, what they will mean going forward. We were talking about the proposals, the three proposals that that passed. We talked a little about the breakdown in Lansing, the fact that Democrats will control both houses of the legislature and the governor's mansion for the first time in 40 years, and what that means, what they will do. Before we get back to the conversation, I want to play a little clip of what Governor Gretchen Whitmer had to say about her agenda for her second and final term in Lansing.
Over the next 4 years, we will continue growing our economy by competing for projects to make more cars, semiconductors, and clean energy here in Michigan. We'll keep fighting to repeal the retirement tax so seniors can keep more of what they've earned. We will protect the Great Lakes for generations and ensure that every Michigander can pursue their potential from preschool to post-secondary.
Pretty interesting list there, both in terms of what was on it and maybe what was not. We got two great guests with us talking about all of this. Craig Mauger is a reporter for the Detroit News who covers state government and politics. Clara Hendrickson is a politics reporter for the Detroit Free Press and PolitiFact Michigan. We want to hear from you as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. And you can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll work into the conversation that way. Let's go to Zoe in Ferndale. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share a little anecdote from my polling location. I've worked the last 7 elections here in Michigan. And yesterday we had, or day before, we had much higher than expected turnout. And I saw it a lot in young people. We had people come with groups of friends. We had people come and bring in their uncle back who voted earlier in the day. And, of course, as poll workers, we're not asking who people are voting for. But when people are excited and they're really, they're there to cast their vote and they want to tell you about it, we had so many people saying, I came today, support Big Gretch, but more importantly, we had so many people saying that it was Proposal 3, it was reproductive rights, that their mom, their sister, whoever, that's the reason that they decided to come and vote on Tuesday.
So, Zoe, you don't have to tell me exactly which polling location you were working at, but give me a sense of where it is and what the makeup of that area is like.
Yeah, so we were over at Henderson School on the west side. It's on Chicago. There are 6 precincts that vote in that location, and it's your typical Detroit neighborhood. It's really close-knit community. We had some folks that came in. They said, hey, this is my neighbor. I brought him along. And people who've been working that polling location for several elections were saying, yeah, we haven't had this many people come through in a long time. So it was it was a really awesome day to just see so many people coming out to vote. And we didn't really have many long lines. We just had like a pretty steady stream throughout the day.
Yeah. That's a great anecdote, Zoe. I'm glad you called and shared it. The overall turnout in Detroit was not what we had hoped it would be on Tuesday, but it's good to hear that you were at a busy precinct and people were fired up about showing up and voting. Okay, let's go next to Jeff in Roseville. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey.
Yeah, so I just a quick comment on a question. On Zoe's point, you know, I look at it less as, you know, being the factor of that guy who brought his friend to the polls or whatever. I always look at the money, and it looks like on Proposal 3, anybody who was watching the ads, a ton of dark money poured into the state and really inspired people to get out. Rich Robinson wrote a great piece for Bridge Michigan, and we can obviously blame most of that on Snyder. But that's beside the point I wanted to raise tonight. Today is, so Whitmer fought for abortion rights, for bodily autonomy, for protecting a woman's right to choose, for keeping decisions between a woman and her doctor. And I think that's what ultimately won her the election. So I'm curious in a second term, how she will deal with university vaccine mandates. If somebody tells you you can't get the your doctor says don't get the vaccine, you can't attend post-secondary education.
Mm-hmm.
So given all of her talk about bodily autonomy, I'm curious if she will support freedom of choice for university students on vaccine mandates in her second term.
It's a fair question, Jeff. I think the comparison, though, doesn't take into account the distinct difference between reproductive freedom and public health, right? You taking a vaccine is about you as an individual and your choices. But if you don't take that vaccine and you are carrying a dangerous disease, you are infringing on the rights of other people to not get sick. And that generally is the reason that the state or the federal government can regulate behavior around things like vaccines, and why something like abortion rights, reproductive rights, which are a privacy matter and are not a public health issue, are treated differently. But Craig, I do wonder if the governor, because she has control of the legislature, might want to revisit some of the things that the Republican legislature tried to do to limit her ability to manage the pandemic the way she did. That was a pretty big fight in Lansing.
Yeah, it was a huge fight. I mean, it loomed over the election on Tuesday. I mean, Republican voters that I talked to at the polls were very focused on that from 2020. But, you know, one point that I would make is, when was Governor Whitmer's favorability rating at its highest point? It was at the height of
during
the COVID-19
pandemic. Yeah.
And that is the real problem that the Republicans face. The issue that was driving their voters, she went too far during the pandemic, which is an argument that has played out, and it's a fair argument. But it's not one that is a winning argument. It just has not been a winning argument in the state of Michigan with voters. If your goal is to win the election, that is not the topic that you want in the center. And you actually saw that on the campaign trail. You know, it was talked about, but it was not the focus of a lot of the candidates' comments. We saw Tudor Dixon talking about what? Education. She was not talking about the pandemic in all of her press conferences. She would mention it, but it wasn't the focus. So, I mean, I think this is a really interesting point. It's one of those pivotal moments for the Republicans. And it's something that I think there'll be lots of discussion about in GOP circles over the coming weeks.
Hmm. Yeah. Again, really appreciate the call and the comments, Jeff. Let's go to Sarah in Grosse Pointe. Sarah, we're running out of time, but I want to get you in here.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I really appreciate it. We were talking about what the Democrats should put on their agenda for this legislative session, and I think one thing that might actually for the first time have bipartisan support is getting rid of the loophole in Michigan law that allows the legislature to overturn a governor's veto by collecting a small number of public signatures.
That's a great point. Again, Clara, respond to what Sarah's talking about here. There's no shortage of things that people will call, I'm sure, and say they want Democrats to do.
Sure. I think that's a really interesting point that I hadn't considered. But Michigan is a national outlier in terms of allowing initiated legislation by a minority of citizens that can bypass the governor's veto and not go to a statewide vote. And one of the things that Proposal 2 does, the voting rights proposal, it basically does away with the Secure My Vote petition initiative, which would have enacted more stringent ID requirements that was attempting to override vetoes that Whitmer had handed to GOP legislation to change election law. So, you know, that could definitely be on the table and something to be considered.
Yeah. Okay. Craig Mauger and Clara Hendrickson, it was really great to have both of you here to talk about the election results here in Michigan. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Tune in tomorrow when we're going to talk with a scholar about why men have fewer friends than in the past and how that's influencing our daily lives. Detroit Today is produced by Sam Corey and Nick Austin. The technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan. And Detroit Today's music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.